I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. The budget for the Philadelphia Police Department is the biggest for the city at more than $750 million for fiscal year 2021. For this fiscal year, it is $820 million. Philadelphia City Council's Police Reform Working Group asked the Comptroller's Office to audit the police department because they were not clear how the funds were being spent. Now, this was back in December 2020 after protests and civil unrest in response to the murder of George Floyd. Rebecca Reinhart, the city controller, released an 85-page audit this week of the police department, revealing staffing problems, slow response times in communities of color, a low clearance rate, outdated technology, little oversight, and excessive use of a disability program. And to add to the urgency, Philadelphia is in the midst of an epidemic of gun violence, so public safety is a top priority. I should add that Police Commissioner Outlaw thanked Reinhart for participating in the review and for including the police department response in the final report. Well, Rebecca Reinhart is sitting across from me here in our Philadelphia studios. Nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Oh, it's great to be here, Marty.
So how does an audit help public safety?
An audit helps public safety because what we sought to do here was review how Philadelphia Police spends its money in terms of resource allocation, in terms of deployment, and outcomes for public safety, because we need to figure out what is going wrong in order to know how to fix it, right? I mean, the police department is a vital public safety agency, and the officers have an incredibly difficult job. So we need to figure out what organizational change is necessary to better provide safety for the people here.
Well, let's talk about staffing. And there
Sure.
were a number of findings in this report, staffing that there are what? How many police officers now work for the police department?
So there's a little under 6,000 uniform officers right now, which is down about 500 from 3 years ago.
And about 2,500 on patrol.
That's right.
What does that tell us?
So out of the 6,000, only 2,500 are in the patrol divisions. What that says is that the majority of uniform officers are not on patrol, are either in specialized units or doing administrative tasks. And what we found was that when you further examine what it means to only have 2,500 on patrol, we saw that there ends up being very few on any on shift in any individual district. So we found only 11 to 22 officers at a time available per district.
Do we know how that compares to other similar cities? I'm thinking of Chicago or, you know, other cities that have the same kind of demographic that we have.
Yeah, we didn't look at the number of officers on shift versus other cities. What we did look at the number of officers on heart and lung and other issues related to other cities. But I think the takeaway is that here you have 6,000 officers, but when you break it down with only 2,500 on patrol, there's only 11 to 22 per district and 11 on the lower crime districts and 22 on the higher arm.
Another one of the findings is the response time when there is some kind of a crisis in the community, finding that there were disparities here.
Right. This was quite troubling. We found that 911 response times differ depending on what neighborhood, what district you live in, what police district. 911 response times overall have declined in recent years. There is a slight uptick back, improvement this past year. But when you look at it by district, we found a real discrepancy where the districts that had more white residents received faster response times than the majority Black and brown neighborhoods in our city.
Were there also economic differences? I mean, racial and economic differences. So in the more sort of high income neighborhoods, there were quicker response times?
Well, we looked at a variety of number of factors. We looked at call volume in districts. We looked at number of shooting victims per district. And the one factor that came out as correlated was race. This needs to be looked into more. Obviously, there shouldn't be slower response times in the districts that are predominantly Black and brown residents. That's obviously not right. And it needs to be looked into more in order to fix it, right?
And how big a discrepancy did you find?
A pretty big discrepancy where we found that the response times were twice as fast in the majority white districts versus the majority Black and brown districts.
Well, let me play a clip, and
sure.
This is related to this, and this is John McNesby. He's the Philadelphia Police Union leader responding to what we are talking about, which is in this report, this audit of the Philadelphia Police Department. Let's give it a quick listen.
We don't receive a call for an auto accident and saying it's a white male or a black male behind the wheel. That's insane. And for her to say that is just, it's irresponsible, totally irresponsible. We answer calls in the order that we receive them, in the priority that we receive them, not by race, not by color, not by creed, not by national origins.
What do you say in response?
The data shows the facts that are presented in my office's review, which is that it's not about who calls, it's about the district that the call is coming from. And if the district has a majority Black and brown neighborhood, majority Black and brown residents, the response times are slower. What John McNesby is saying isn't the actual data. He's just talking about who calls. That's not what the audit actually shows. What the audit shows is that response times are slower across all priority types, we found. I mean, we really did a deep dive on the data, and we brought on three firms actually to assist with this review. It took 8 months. Stout, which is a firm that specializes in analyzing large government agencies. We brought in the Center for Policing Equity, which is a subject matter expert on policing inequity. And the data shows what the data shows, and the response times are slower across all priority types. So priority one is urgent, you know, crime and process, but then priority four and six are, you know, a dog barking incessantly or some other noise complaint. What we found was that across all priority types, that the response times were much slower in these districts. So this is an issue of racial equity, and it needs to be fixed.
And that is our guest, Rebecca Reinhart. She's the Philadelphia City Controller, just released an 85-page audit this week of the Philadelphia Police Department. And we're talking about some of the findings in this audit. And as always on Radio Times, you can join our conversation. You can email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can also call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. We were talking about the number of police officers, members of the Philadelphia Police Department. What about attrition, recruitment, people retiring, obviously?
Yeah.
Where does that leave the force itself?
Sure. There's big issues with this. And I do think it's important to point out that the officers that are on patrol doing this work every day, day in and day out, are working for the large part very hard. And the changes that are recommended as part of this audit that are coming out of the findings are recommended to provide that change to better support the officers in providing public safety, right? And I think that's important to keep in mind with all of this back and forth, right? So attrition and recruitment, big challenges. Yep. For the Philadelphia Police Department. Similar to other police departments across the country, that there's been significant attrition, significant officers leaving the force since pretty much it started since the civil unrest following George Floyd's murder and the deepening discussion around what does policing look like and police
funding. Which makes it harder to recruit?
Yes, it's made it it has made it harder to recruit, and it's also increased the number of officers leaving the force. There is an answer to this, and the answer has to do with community involvement in building a police force. At what I mean by that, and this is a main overarching recommendation coming from this audit, is that what we need to do is start from the community's needs, neighborhood by neighborhood, and say, what do the people want? Residents, business owners, faith leaders, what do the people want from their police? Because police are supposed to provide public safety, and they work hard, right. But not every neighborhood feels safe from police.
So one can imagine with all these districts, you might come up with a different plan depending on what the neighbors, what the people living in that district want.
Absolutely.
From their police.
Absolutely. And the whole idea is that if this were done, that instead of spending being done based on historical levels, which is what's not done now, that the budget and resource allocation would be built based on what the people want in that district, in that neighborhood. And the idea then would be that the trust would develop, that there would be true legitimacy, meaning that people respect the police's authority and believe that the police are operating in their best interest. Obviously, that's not the case now in all neighborhoods. Right. But if that were, then that would also help with recruitment. And with clearance rates, which we could talk about a little bit later.
Which I do want to talk about, but I'm thinking about recruitment.
Sure.
Would that mean perhaps a more diverse police force? So if you're recruiting from the neighborhood, chances are you could recruit more people of color.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the vision for a future police department. And I will say there's no large city in this country that we found did this right or does this right. But that is what needs to happen, because then the diversity of the force will increase, recruitment will get easier, the police and community will build that trust, which will then help in a variety of other ways.
Well, I'll tell you what, we have to take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation again, talking with the Philadelphia City Controller, Rebecca Reinhart, and just released an audit of the Philadelphia Police Department earlier this week, revealing staffing problems, which we have been talking about, slow response times, especially in communities of color, which we have been talking about. We'll also be talking about the clearance rates, some outdated technology using index cards, for instance, little oversight, and the excessive use of a disability program. In fact, we have State Representative Chris Rabb awaiting to join our conversation so we can talk about that program. And you can join us, as always, on Radio Times. Email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. Tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And do stay with us. Much more after the short break. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moscowen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. We're talking with Philadelphia City Controller Rebecca Reinhart about her just-released audit of the Philadelphia Police Department, finding understaffing and recruitment problems, slow response times, a low clearance rate, among other issues. The review also highlighted a dramatic increase in the use of the Heart and Lung Benefit Program for officers injured on duty. The department has paid something like $205 million dollars in salaries in the last 5 years to officers on injury. Currently, there are about 570 of them today. Well, joining us now is Democratic State Representative Chris Rabb from Philadelphia. He and Representative Brian Sims introduced legislation, House Bill 2643, in February to make the Heart and Lung Benefit Program more transparent. And Chris Rabb, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good to be back.
Nice to have you back with us. And let me actually begin with Rebecca Reinhart, just because you just did a deep dive looking at this particular program. How is it supposed to work?
Sure. So the Heart and Lung Program is a state benefit that allows officers that are injured on the force to go on the program where they get their salary and don't have to pay taxes.
Which is significant. It is significant. 20% of someone's income.
Right. It is very significant. So it's actually they get paid more than if they were working, right? That is the way it's supposed to work. What we've seen is in Philadelphia is a dramatic increase in heart and lung. And I will say, because of data issues, that the injured on duty isn't tracked separately from heart and lung within the police department and risk management in a way that is useful. So when we're talking about it, we're looking at all injured on duty, but the increase is dramatic. There's 300 more officers on IOD than there were just several years ago.
Well, let me get you in on the conversation, Chris Rabb. Then I know, as I mentioned in my introduction, you and Brian Sims have introduced legislation. How do you want to reform this program?
Transparency and accountability. As it's set up, there isn't any. And all the healthcare providers and physicians who these police officers go through, they're chosen by the Fraternal Order of Police. And so that's a real conflict of interest. So we're really talking about making sure that folks who put in these claims, that they're legitimate. And there's a lot of evidence to suggest that a lot are not. And we're talking about the largest expenditure in the city budget.
For the police department, yes.
The police department. And so this is not just something that erodes public trust. This has to piss off police officers who are working and getting paid 20% less, but are actually doing the work and have told folks that they're understaffed. So you have folks who are sitting at home starting businesses. I mean, the expose and the Inquirer just laid out an extraordinary pattern of folks who are out under heart and lung and doing all kinds of things, being very active, and they're not supposed to. So our bill would also say you can't have secondary work.
You can't have secondary work. And I should give a shout-out to the Inquirer. Their piece that came out earlier this year was called MIA, Crisis in the Ranks. Let me go back to you, Rebecca Reinhart. If you see this dramatic increase use of this program, does that automatically mean it's being abused?
No, it doesn't automatically mean it's being abused, but we have seen, as Representative Rabb just mentioned, through reporting in the Inquirer and other reporting, that there is abuse going on. And also, I will point out that the number of officers that Philadelphia has out is much higher percentage-wise than other cities' police forces. So those facts alone indicate that likelihood of fraud and abuse in the system.
In fact, you found in Philadelphia something like 10 to 11% of the force out on this disability. You looked at Chicago, it was 3%.
That's right. So other cities are much lower, showing that there is likely abuse in this program. And one of the things our audit also found was that the system for monitoring and investigating it is broken the way it stands between not just the PPD but the risk management unit.
Chris Rabb, let me go back to you. As you mentioned, and I just want to make sure our listeners understand this, so that if I'm a member of the Philadelphia Police Force and I get injured and I go to the doctor, this is a doctor that is approved by the Fraternal Order of Police. Is that correct?
Yes. And 96% of the approval, 96% of the claims are approved. Compared to industry standards, which are much lower. So why would we need that intermediary? We don't. These folks who are providing care for police officers and firefighters who are legitimately injured, we need to make sure who those doctors are and make sure they're vetted and have the proper background. But it doesn't make sense. And I don't know if those other cities that the comptroller looked at had the same benefit. This was a benefit that came out, I believe, in the 70s as promoted by former state rep George Kenney, now with Temple. if this is a unique benefit, that might explain what's happening. I don't believe that our officers are more clumsy.
There's something here.
Where there's smoke, there's fire. And I just want to mention, too, that I feel comfortable saying this as a legislator in Harrisburg, where there are similar types of issues, right? So I'm not putting up a higher threshold for our men and women in blue than I am legislators who have similar programs that are highly problematic. And if they were looked into greater, you would see a lot of similar patterns.
So if an auditor looked at other cities in Pennsylvania, you think they'd find the same thing?
I would imagine so. I would imagine so. This is not something that just goes to the city of the first class. So potentially, yes. What is the entity that's going to do that? Because the comptroller in Philadelphia can't go to other counties. It would have to be the auditor general, which is what my bill with Representative Sims put forth, that there's ongoing auditing by the auditor general.
And you're nodding your head.
Yeah, it's a great idea. It's a great idea. So I think that we need to make sure that all the officers that can be working are working. And it definitely is putting the officers that are coming to work every day right now at a disadvantage because they're working so hard to try to make up for other officers that aren't there because of abuse of the system.
Well, let me play a clip. And this is Philadelphia Police Union leader John McNesby yesterday also addressed this controversy over the abuse of this disability benefits program, specifically in the heart and lung program, which has allowed hundreds of officers to get paid tax-free when they say they are too hurt to work. And this is WHYY's Tom McDonald reporting.
Fraternal Order of Police head John McNesby said the union wants to resolve the disability issues with officers and has repeatedly asked the city to give them the ability to help move cops off disability ranks and back into their patrol cars.
We have been working with the city, attempting to sit down, and it was working very well, putting officers back to work. You know, I don't want anybody hanging out there with a hangnail, but I don't want anybody going back to work with a broken limb either. That's insane. So we had a happy medium where we were working together. The city administration stopped that.
The FOP had said there are ways the city can bring in more recruits for the force, which includes easing some requirements and helping those who just barely miss qualifications with remedial classes until they qualify at the earliest possible opportunity. A statement from the Kenney administration said they're continuing to work to reform the system with the police officers union. Tom McDonald, WHYY News.
And Rebecca Reinhardt, is there some consensus, some movement on bringing some oversight and reform to this program?
Well, I think that the Philadelphia Police Commissioner, Danielle Outlaw, and her senior team were very cooperative through this process and responded to our audits and seem to be really looking through our recommendations. So I hope there's some movement around this so that we can fix this issue. It would help with the number of officers on the force, absolutely.
Well, and she told the Philadelphia Inquirer that the abuse of this system was, in her words, absolutely repulsive.
There you go. There you go. That's that. And I think that together we can fix this. We need to, right? We need to fix it for all the people in our city to make people feel safe.
And it almost sounds like McNesby agrees with you that it needs to be fixed. He said, "I don't want people out on hangouts."
Well, you'd have to ask him.
I know you can't speak for him. Chris Rabb, go ahead. Sounds like you want to say something. Go ahead.
Yeah, no. What is he going to say?
I mean, the reason we have.
The police misconduct database on the state level was because after all the protests around George Floyd and such, you know, politicians were saying, we got to make this go away. This doesn't help anyone. We got to do something. We need to look like we're doing the right thing. And that's how I was able to get my bill through to create a system by which someone who has had misconduct documented in their file could not just sneak out of one police force and go somewhere in the suburbs and pop up. The reason that happened was because of people on the streets, investigative reporting, audits like the one that Comptroller Reinhardt has put forth. these are the things that increase the level of accountability and transparency. And without this pushback, nothing's going to happen. So in this light, you know, what are people going to say? Oh, no, we're okay with folks committing fraud at taxpayer dollars when people are crying out for a better response to violent crime. And the report also showed that, roughly only 2,500 police are actually on the beat?
That's right.
In a city of 1.5 million. What are we doing? They don't even have job descriptions. What does success look like? And as the comptroller said, we have to get that from the community, because this is really about community safety, not necessarily public safety. It's a term we use a lot, but community safety means that whatever community you come from, you're going to feel safe. It doesn't matter what body you inhabit, what neighborhood or zip code, you feel safe. And that's part of the job of policing, is to instill that confidence that you can walk the streets, you can take your kids out to the park. And if you don't, there's something systemic happening that has to be addressed. And that doesn't happen unless we have audits like this, investigative reporting, people on the streets expressing their First Amendment rights, saying we demand to know more and to have folks with so much money and so much influence be held to account.
Chris Rabb, final question to you before we have to say goodbye, and even going back to this bill that you have to reform this disability program. Where does it stand in Harrisburg? Has there been movement on it? Are Republicans, which control our state legislature, are they interested in moving this forward?
No. So it's been stuck in the Labor Committee since for months and will not come out of committee, because people need to know in Harrisburg, every standing committee has 15 Republicans and only 10 Democrats. Mm-hmm. If this is an issue that Republicans don't consider a priority, even though it's all about waste, abuse, and fraud, which is a conservative mantra about decreasing the size of government, despite this bloated number that we're paying for, Republicans don't want to move the bill. And that's part of the irony, because conservatives believe in law and order and tough on crime and police are always right. Well, if that's the case, they shouldn't like the police who are wrong, who are bilking public dollars from the poorest big city in the nation. Hmm. Where's the outrage there? And when you hear that deafening silence, it tells you something is going on beneath the surface.
Well, we have to leave it there. State Representative Democrat Chris Rabb, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. And you are listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Anything you want to add? Because I do want to move on to some other issues. But Rebecca Reinert, anything you want to add?
I think the representative was so right on the point, talking about every community needing to feel safe. And there's many things that need to happen for that to occur. There's the budgeting process from the community up. There's making sure that there's enough officers on patrol to respond in a timely fashion to the community's needs, which involves civilianization, which we can get into. It involves recruitment. It involves the fixing the heart and lung. So all of this together is the way forward. Fixing all of this.
Here's an email from Derek, who says, I believe that the Philadelphia Police Department could also build trust when the police officers look more like the people in the communities that they serve. This is something we referenced earlier, but I know this is something that makes a huge difference in people's
absolutely.
Lives.
Absolutely. And if there's more trust, then it will be easier to recruit a diverse population of people to want to be police officers. And also the process of civilianization. When I say that, what I mean is there's many uniform officers doing jobs that could be done by civilians. I mean, police officers go through months and months of police academy to be an officer. But some desk jobs definitely could be done by civilians. And if those jobs were filled with civilians, then that also could increase the diversity of the force by having more diversity in those civilian roles. And it also would increase the number of officers on patrol.
Your report also finds that the police department still uses things like index cards. Is it teletype machine? I actually had to Google that because I couldn't exactly remember.
Machine. It's like a typewriter.
It's like a typewriter that can send information, but sort of early on, sort of electronic messaging. But
right. It's still being used. So what our review found was that the police department is still using very outdated systems. And in order to talk about how do we revamp the police department to best support the community and also best support the officers to do their job, we have to look at this type of inefficiency, which is index cards. There's still an index card that's kept for every officer on the force. Now, that was
with
the
name and information, things like that.
Yes. And so the new payroll system went into effect in 2019, but the department's still keeping those index cards. Okay. Another example is there's officers that have their job is delivering interoffice envelopes between districts. Okay. That could be done. First of all, there shouldn't be interoffice envelopes being delivered between districts, but if there did need to be some delivery, it could be a civilian and the officers could be out on the street. And then the use of the teletype, that there's a member of the police department that spends 2 hours every day typing up roll call information. And then that's sent to each of, through teletype, it's sent to the districts to be read out loud, where many of these things, email could suffice. So I think that the police are so busy doing their everyday job that they need help from the mayor's office, from the managing director's office, to implement these types of changes.
Well, let's take another short break and then we'll get back to our conversation again. Rebecca Reinhart is our guest. She is the Philadelphia City Controller, and she and her office just released an 85-page audit of the Philadelphia Police Department. We are talking about their findings. Much more after this very short break. Do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowain, talking with Philadelphia City Controller Rebecca Reinhart about her just released audit of the Philadelphia Police Department. We've been talking about some of the findings, including understaffing, I should say, recruitment problems, slow response times in various communities, a low clearance rate, something we will be talking about. And joining us now is Rick Collins. He's a retired licensed social worker. He served on the Controller Community Council, helping to advise Rebecca Reinhart on the audit of the Philadelphia Police Department that we have been discussing. And Rick Collins, nice to have you with us on the show.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Hi, Rebecca.
Hi, Rick. Good to be on with you.
Yeah, nice to have you with us. What was it like to serve on this council, Rick?
I think it was an invigorating process. It was well organized, and you got a chance to interact with people who differed on their positions regarding law enforcement. But I think it was the other piece was there was a learning process that took place, and we all pretty were quick studies, and we were supported by the staff. They answered our questions, and they responded to our requests.
Well, that is really terrific to hear. And Rick, what would you say, we've been talking a lot about these findings, for you, what was the most significant finding from this report, the thing that you learned that you didn't know, that you frankly want our listeners to know about?
There were several pieces. One of them had to do with the understaffing of the police force, that at any given time, maybe 41% of the police were available for patrol. That the wide discrepancy that and the response time to neighborhoods of color, specifically Black and Latinx communities, which had always been an urban legend, but now it was confirmed in Black and white. And finally, it was that the police department, while they're brave and hardworking, seemed to have no strategic plan, and that seemed to have been a long term process. You know, many police chiefs ago, many mayors ago, and Rebecca stepped up and kind of gave us a chance to kind of look at that. So I think that kind of sums up with that.
No, those are really significant. We've been talking actually both on the air and off the air with Rebecca Reinhardt about community police relationships and how important that is to public safety. And I wonder, first, Rick, let me just hear from you about what you think can improve that relationship, and then we'll hear from Rebecca.
Well, I think, for one thing, even though people talk about community policing, it's just kind of given lip service when it changes from commissioner to commissioner. I think having police in the communities very visible, out of their cars, seen by people is one piece. I think a big thing is looking at a real in-depth, concentrated recruitment process, which brings in more people that reflect the community that we live in. Getting African-American recruits is a nationwide problem, but that seems to be a critical problem here. And those are some of the things that we would need to have. And also, we civilianizing many of the positions in the police department that would release uniform officers to spend more time in the community, because police are not warriors. They are protectors, and they can protect us if they're not there.
Yeah, and you're nodding your head. We've been talking about this, but just how important that is.
Absolutely. Rick is so right that we need to have the officers where they can truly have an impact on safety, and that's out on the street.
Right.
So that needs to happen.
And Rick, one of the things that Rebecca and I were talking about is the fact that the police department has typewriters, and they still use typewriters and index cards and teletype.
Yes, yes. That really impressed me, because that they were using index cards, typewriters, and people were carrying messages from one district to the next with, as if they never heard of, I don't know, faxing and sending stuff by the electronic
faxing,
media.
Right?
Yeah. And I mean, I'm a baby boomer, but even I'm aware of all that stuff that exists, and I've used it in jobs before I retired for the fifth time. So those are some of the things that we kind of looked at. I think that the whole issue, some in our discussions, you know, we talked about things like school resource police and stuff like that, and that's something that I don't really support, because obviously Sandy Hook and Vivaldi proved that police resource folks didn't make kids safer. But that's another issue.
Well, indeed it is. And Rick, I really appreciate you joining us today on Radio Times, getting your perspective on this 86-page report. Thanks so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Yeah, I just want to say that I'm a fan. I wanted to thank Rebecca again for letting me be...
Thank you. Thank you, Rick. And I want to say just one thing about the Community Council, which Rick was a member of, that we in the Comptroller's Office developed this Community Council with amazing, diverse people with different backgrounds and different beliefs coming in about policing to guide our review, to make sure that we are looking and thinking about everything. So I want to thank you, Rick, and just thank the entire Community Council for making this so much more of a robust process. Mm-hmm. Because in the end, I mean, our city is so different, but really at the root of it, we're more similar, right? We all want to feel safe, right? So I think we just need a roadmap to get there.
That's right. We're gonna still remain in this spaces. We're not going anywhere. We're not leaving. So,
well, I'm glad to hear that. And Rick, I appreciate you joining us on Radio Times. That is Rick Collins. You're very welcome. Rick Collins, retired licensed social worker, and as Rebecca Reinhardt just said, served on the Comptroller Community Council, advising her office on the audit of the Philadelphia Police Department. You can join us. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. You can also call that phone number 1-888-477-9499. I do want to talk about Operation Pinpoint, and this was a significant part of the audit, and this was launched back in 2019, focusing on some of these more high crime areas of the city. What's the mission of Operation Pinpoint?
Sure. So Operation Pinpoint is the police, Philadelphia Police Department's main crime fighting strategy. And it was expanded in 2020 from 7 grids to 45. And the idea behind this is to combine intelligence-based policing with hotspot policing, and also is supposed to include foot patrol, which is found to be tremendously successful at reducing crime, and something called mere encounters.
Is that M-E-R-E?
M-E-R-E. Mere encounters, and this is very interesting, actually, is an encounter between a police officer and a member of the public that is consensual. It's what is supposed to replace the interaction that used to occur in stop and frisk. And the idea is if a police officer talks to a business owner, if a police officer talks to someone in the community, a block captain, that those encounters over time build that trust, right? So that's what it's Operation Pinpoint supposed to do. But what we found was that the evaluation hasn't occurred to know if it's working. So the way the data is being kept is that deployment data is not being kept at the level of detail to see if it's having an impact on crime or not. So we don't know right now if it's working or not. And I think one of the recommendations coming out of this review is for the department to do either an independent evaluation of Operation Pinpoint or a credible internal evaluation of it.
So it expanded from 7 to 14 without this, internal review. But on paper, does it make sense? I mean, as you mentioned, foot patrols generally are believed to reduce crime. This is part of this program, although I was reading some of the, police captains are saying sometimes we just don't have enough people to send out onto the street.
Right, right. So theoretically, on paper, it sounds good. I think the issue is that what we found was, for example, that many districts are not using foot patrol. And foot patrol is something, and there's a Temple University study on it actually in Philadelphia back from 2009 that showed foot patrol in high crime areas reduced violent crime by over 20%. So this is something that works. But what we found is that it's not being used in the way that it should be right now.
Let me read a couple of comments. One from Mike: could the number of patrols within police districts vary substantially enough to skew the response time you're pointing out as based on race? I guess what Mike is saying is that if there are high crime areas and they are communities of color, does that reduce the response from the Philadelphia Police Department?
It could. So what the finding in our audit is that there is a correlation, right, between race and response time across all priority types.
From dogs barking to
right to high crime, right? It could be what the caller is saying, that that because there's more calls, but although we didn't find that in initial analysis, it could be. But then the answer to that would be, well, then there should be more staffing. When you look at service delivery from a city perspective, safety is a service. And everyone should have equal service delivery. The majority of people in every neighborhood are good people, right? So, to say that someone that lives in a neighborhood that has more crime shouldn't be protected is not right either. So
yeah,
it's just something that needs to be evaluated more.
Indeed. Here's Joan, who says, what can we do as citizens to put pressure on the city to not ignore this report? And I had how many reports do you do that get some attention for a couple of days and then they're put on the shelf?
Yeah. Great question. And I think that the continuing just voice of the public is very helpful in this. One thing that really heartened me was the police commissioner and her senior staff's response to this, that they were open and receptive to the findings and recommendations in this audit, because I think that's the way forward, to have senior leadership in the police department on board with the concepts and the major recommendations is a way forward. And this isn't, you know, change isn't easy. Change isn't easy.
But is this unusual to get that kind of response from the police department, from the head of the police department?
I mean, it's a good thing. It's a good thing. And it's not, I wouldn't say it's unusual, but when, you know, as controller, my job is to audit and to find things that are wrong in departments and make recommendations for improvement. Sometimes a department head could agree and be willing to make changes. And, you know, sometimes with some significant issues, for example, I've gotten pushback from the mayor, mayor's administration. So something like this, this is great. This is a great opportunity, I think, when there's the commissioner is so on board and her senior team.
And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Well, speaking of the mayor, there have been all sorts of noises made about you as running for mayor of Philadelphia. Are you? Are you thinking about it?
So I am seriously thinking about it. I am the controller right now, and in order to run for mayor, I would need to resign my job as controller. But I am seriously thinking about it. I love this city. We have an amazing city, but there's so many issues right now that the city needs leadership to lead and to fix these issues and to chart a path forward. So I'm thinking about it.
Since you mentioned that, what would change your mind one way or the other? Either a yes column or a no column.
All I can say, Marty, is I really am considering it, and I love the city.
Are you worried about the city?
I think the current trends are concerning. Yes, but I also know it's fixable. That we can do this. We can fix it. There are, for example, on gun violence, there are proven intervention strategies that work that the current mayor hasn't implemented, but that we could, and they've worked so well in other cities. We can fix the issues. We can clean our streets. You know, we need to improve the education system. We can do all of these things. So yes, I'm concerned because, you know, there's the crime rates are so high, the violence is high.
It's scaring people away from
the
city.
It is scaring people. And some stores are closing. But at the same time, I don't want to depress people because it is solvable. And we've just got to grab this and say, we need to fix this. We can fix this. We have an amazing city. Our sports teams are doing great.
Oh, my goodness.
Our arts and culture and we have so much going for us here in Philly, our neighborhoods, the people, that it is fixable.
Well, we're going to leave it there. Rebecca Reinhart, thank you for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thanks so much for having me, Marty.
You're very welcome. And she is the, for now anyway, the Philadelphia City Controller. And we've been talking about her office's brand new report, its audit of the Philadelphia Police Department. To replay this hour, many more hours, go to WHYY.org and look for Radio Times and the programs. You can also download a podcast of the show wherever you get your podcasts. Adam Staniszewski, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Bilder and Paige Murray Bessler. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you so much for joining us.